Okay, J Rhyme Fest is. I don't even, you know, the one thing about this, Mr. Fest, I'm never sure if it's, is it Rhyme and then Fest is your last name? I'm never sure. Jay, how does that work for you?
Just put it together. It's all one name.
Yes. Okay, fine. Whatever. All right, now let's talk about this. Che, you are obviously a, you know, you're a musician and a writer. You've been you've been incredibly successful in your career. And what has happened to you in Chicago as a Chicagoan a couple of years ago? Is a story. I want to start with telling that story again in terms of your interaction with police, but also where this goes from there. So let's go back. What was that in 2016? Was it?
Yeah, 2016, something like that, where I was robbed at gunpoint in my car, and then I went to the 3rd District Police Station, and I was treated worse trying to make the complaint than I was in the actual robbery itself. In terms of, you know, I figure I live in Chatham, and because I'm a property owner, I'm a taxpayer, I pay the salary of the police, I expected to be able to turn up to the police when there was a crime. But just as a person, not knowing who I was, just, you know, anybody from the community, basically they were like, no complaint. We're not taking any of your complaints here. You know what I mean? And tried to kick me out of the station until I started to videotape them. And then everything turned around and an investigation was done. But, you know, one of the things that I was told by people in the community is that I was dumb for even going to the police with a complaint. And so where we were then, and even furthermore now, is at a point where the police are more of an occupying force than they are a force to protect and serve the community.
Well, what would you suggest in terms of making changes here?
Well, first I want to talk about what the mayor is suggesting that is worth it and that can help. You know, when we talk about giving officers mental health counseling and better access to that, that can only help. When we talk about the community helping to train officers in the community, the community helping to train new recruits, that can help. However, what the majority of this is symbolism, and it is a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. So, you know, the community policing has to be bolstered. We got to do a whole restructure. What you're looking at in what the mayor is suggesting is reform. We need restructure. When you look at the police officers, whether it's Rakia Boyd, whether it's you know, I'm sorry, what's the young man?
Laquan McDonald.
Goodness, Laquan McDonald. There were already reforms taking place and community policing reforms taking place. That didn't stop people who may live in Wrigleyville or may live somewhere out in Beverly that are policing in Inglewood, that are policing in Roseland. That didn't stop the guy from putting his knee on George Floyd's neck. It's not reforms that are the problem here. It's the hearts of the officers in the communities that they are supposed to serve. And unless we face that, unless we say something's wrong with the hearts of the police officers in the communities that they're not from, and to say we need a restructure means the policing needs to come from the community. The only way to police these communities is with people who are indigenous from the community. Over 50% of the police in Chatham are not from Chatham. So what does that say for how they look at who they're police? They are the others. It's occupation.
Well, but there are, okay. First of all, I love you, Rhymefest. And, you know,
we love each other. Yes.
We love each other. But I think you're painting with way too broad of a brush here, because you know police officers, you know there's a Gold Star police family in Chatham I know very, very well, you know, they lost their son who was a police officer dad was a police officer, they lost their son who was a police officer in an attempted robbery of his motorcycle. I mean, it was there are stories here, there are positive stories as well, and one of the things that Hope you're not getting pulled over, Rhymefest. This would be a bad sort of moment in the middle of this interview. But there, this is you know, getting cops to, you know, patrol their own neighborhoods and things like that. I understand the concept of it, but I don't know that it's 110% practical in Chicago to get that done for every neighborhood. But it's certainly, there are attempts here to get this thing right. And there are cops who don't do the right thing, like in any business, right? And there are cops who did, you know, and this guy, there isn't a single police officer I have spoken to who thinks that, and I've talked to a lot of them, that thinks that what happened in Minneapolis was okay. Who knows?
That's just because it's that case. When we talk about Philando Castile, when we talk about, you know, again, Laquan McDonald, all of these different cases, you know, the one thing I keep hearing from police officers is fear. I want to get back home to my family. I want to get, you know. So what we have is, and these are the facts, over 50% of the police in black and brown communities are not from those communities. Over 50%. When I go to the north side, those guys who are policing in that community know the people in that community. They're from that community. If we have black cops shooting white people in Wrigleyville, it'd be a whole nother conversation, and you know it. So what I'm saying is, why is it that it's not practical when I'm saying to you that we expect that same level of community participation from our police and our city?
Che, hold on one second for us. We're going to get some phone calls in here, too. 312-981-7200. Che Rhymefest Smith is with us. He's a Grammy winner. That's right. This man has a Grammy on his shelf right now. But he's also he's a proud member of the Chicago community, and he has his thoughts. And we're going to share. If he's sharing them, you're going to share yours at 312-981-7200. And we're seeking solutions here to the problems that are plaguing us. And let's go to the phones. 312-981-7200 is phone number. Joe, you are on WGN. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Ro. You're sort of touching this earlier when you talked about this. A lot of this is related to the war on drugs. As long as we have illegal drugs.
Hold on one second there. I think we lost Joe. Joe, you still there? All right, go ahead.
Yeah, hello. Testing, yep. 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, no, you're good. Keep going. So the war on drugs.
You touched on this earlier when you mentioned prohibition. A lot of this has to do with the war on drugs. By having illegal drugs and people want to use them, we've created an entire underclass of criminals.
Kevin, what would you call this? Classic technical difficulties? Is that what this would be? All right. Joe, are you there?
Yep, I'm here again.
Okay. You keep getting shot onto hold there. Okay. So the war on drugs. We'll do this one thought at a time. So this goes back to the war on drugs, but I mean, poverty and the separation of these communities and violence, that's been going on even prior to the war on drugs, though.
Right. It's a combination of several factors. We freed the slaves, but didn't give them any education or their descendants any education, leaving them unemployable. And then you add to the mix a quick, easy way for them to make money, but risky way, and they take it. And you end up with neighborhoods full of criminals.
All right. I want to get Rhymefest's thought on that. So the idea here is that the drug industry is basically what has driven this thing. Do you think that in terms of crime and the disparity in neighborhoods is a result of that?
Well, I do want to say that our brother, you know, he hit on the war on drugs, but he went right from slavery to the war on drugs. There was a lot of time in between that called Jim Crow. You know, what was going on with the civil rights movement, that whole thing that was happening. The war on drugs was just the latest assault on communities of color. It wasn't the only, but I do want to get back to policy. You know, unless our mayor is going to do something about these deals that the FOP makes with the city that I didn't see in her reforms, she did not mention about these contracts with the FOP where police continually murder citizens and nothing happens or can legally happen to them. We have to, you know, we're very good at busting up teachers unions and busting up workers unions, but it's something about this FOP that nobody wants to touch. And if we're going to make real reform, Ro, we got to go there.
Okay, well, but there are police officers. I mean, you mentioned the Laquan McDonald situation, right? I mean, that guy is in prison. The police officer was involved in that. There are other police officers going to prison. This guy in Minnesota, without question, is going to end up in prison as a result. And maybe even the three other guys who stood around and did nothing may end up in prison, too. So, I mean, I don't know what you're specifically... With the free, wait, hold on one second. I don't know specifically with the Fraternal Order of Police, the deal that you're talking about. And Lori Lightfoot, I mean, remember, she was one of the leaders of the police accountability movement in Chicago. That's one of the reasons she's mayor of this city. And I don't think that she would consider herself, or the FOP would consider her, an ally.
Bro, what you're talking about where people are going to jail are high-profile cases. And the last few years, Chicago has paid over $500 million in police brutality lawsuits. That's more than just the high-profile cases you see on TV. Yeah, I think one of the issues we have here is that the situation is more complex than media gives it credit. Media will say, "Oh, look, they're looting," and really, what is not talked about is even the mayor has admitted there are outside forces coming into our city, coming into our communities. I've had numerous reports and got video and camera footage of people who aren't from the community breaking glass at stores, and then the looters go in. So, you know, we do have right-wingers that are here that are faking like they're Antifa. You know what I mean? I mean, there's all types of anarchy going on right now. And to look at this as a black and white issue, I think... makes this more simple than it is. This is a complex narrative.
All right, we'll get right back to the phones here. 312-981-7200. That's Rhymefest. Che Rhymefest Smith. Samantha, you're on WGN. Go ahead, Samantha.
Hi. This might be, I guess, maybe a more long-term endgame potential solution. But in my experience, and I am white, I know that there were things that I were taught to fear about people who happened to have a darker skin color. And I think that the only way we can maybe really take a look at this is have authentic conversations where we have to admit our fear, perhaps to someone who does happen to be that darker skin color, whether it's black or even Latino, specifically black now in this conversation. Because I think once you acknowledge it, even if it's subconscious, even if you think that you don't have these ingrained, potentially racist ideas, it could very well be subconscious and it comes out and you have these conversations and you realize it in yourself. And maybe there is a part of the black community that also fears white people for good reason, as we're seeing. But maybe they need to get that out too, so we can have a real conversation about how do we stop fearing one another. How do we stop thinking that if I go into your neighborhood or I just interact with you, my life is at risk? Because I think if we do these other things, they're just potentially short-term band-aids that will continue to expose this idea that we fear each other and we're not really getting to the root of that.
Really well said, Samantha. Thank you very much. Jay, what do you think about that?
I think Samantha is exactly correct, but what I would like to add to what she said is, you give those people with that implicit bias, you give them a gun and a badge, and give them, and I'm going to go back to the Fraternal Order of Police, give them a union that makes them think that if I kill someone, I'm not going to jail over it. I mean, you know, a few have, most haven't. If I brutally attack someone and my camera isn't off, I won't get fired for it. You know, so now you empower that type of implicit bias with the authority to hurt and maim. And this is what you get, bro.
Well, I want to step back, though, to the more general question. Okay, you and I can disagree about some of that, but that's not germane, I think, to what she's talking about, which is, let's go to the more simple... Well, because this isn't really so much about the police interaction. She's talking about the really general issue of mistrust in America between people who don't look like each other, right? Yes. And so how do we have that conversation? We can debate the police thing, you know, on the side of that. But right now, let's just talk about that issue. Because, you know, you're watching TV. Like, all right, so, Jay, you're watching TV on Sunday night, and you're watching the pictures coming out of Chicago with kids running into stores and, you know, coming out with liquor, you know, bottles and mattresses and all the rest of that stuff. And Lori Lightfoot, I thought, was so good in her response to this, which was, you know, the problem that we have is that by being irresponsible, by looting, that's sending a message. That sends a message that racists are, that gives them fuel to their racist fire, right? And say, hey, just look at those people. That's the way that they act. And I think we're not having a conversation about exactly what she's talking about. I think she hit it exactly right. The fear of the other, the fear of each other.
Yes. But Ro, I don't think that it's a separate. We both agree that she hit it on the mark. But what you're trying to separate is that is that type of fear is what has been policing our neighborhoods. And what you see as a result of that fear acting out in the form of brutality, in the form of police murders, that fear acting itself out with the power of the law, is the reaction of stores burning down, is the reaction of the looting that you see. And also, I want to make clear, a lot of these stores that you see being looted and burned down aren't owned by people in the community. They're owned by people who live in Skokie, who live in Naperville, who live in Evanston, and their beauty supply store is burning down, or their Chinese restaurant is burning down, or their grocery store. So a lot of these places, the people are looking at like, I didn't have a stake in it, and it didn't really have a stake in our community. I think the opportunity we have, though, in the burning is what can be built after it, but we have to acknowledge that it has to be by and from the indigenous people of those communities, well, with the support of the city.
There's also the reality, though. I mean, I have no idea, you know, where my dry cleaner lives, whether she lives in the neighborhood or she doesn't live in the neighborhood. But that's not.
I know where mine lives.
But that doesn't give anybody the right to destroy that business, right? Doesn't just because they're not.
It doesn't. But you got to understand that in our communities, we were socially distancing before it was a trend. And it wasn't because of simple robberies. It was because of the fear that the young lady spoke about. So you go into a Subway in Chatham, you already had the bulletproof glass and the roundabout that they give you your food. There's no personal service because there's no one in the community that there's a separation between the business owners and the consumers.
All right, we're going to leave it there, but we have to have this conversation in studio once this thing is all said and done, because it's hard to have this, you know, with the way that we have to social distance this, but these are all important things to be talking about, and this is the kind of conversation that Chicagoans need to have. So, Che Rheinfest Smith, who is, by the way, not only a very dear friend, and we disagree with we can often disagree with each other, but we love each other like brothers, and he is and he's one of the greatest artists ever to come out of Chicago, and a Grammy winner. So there you go. Thank you very much.
Oscar winner and 2 Grammys. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. There, right. He didn't want to drop the Oscar thing in there because you and Common, you wrote that song. I get it. I understand.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see you.
Love you, brother.
Love you, too. All right. We're going to do the news and come back to your phone calls at 312-981-7200. You can continue to talk about this. George, you're on WGN. 312-981-7200 is our telephone number. Go ahead, George.
How you doing, sir?
Good.
Okay. Well, all I wanted to say was basically just a reiteration of what the young lady said before. To me, I'm a police officer in the South Suburbs. I want to talk about the Black Lives Matter movement and Police Lives Matter. I'm a black man. First of all, I understand that Black Lives Matter simply meant Black Lives Matter also. What the police did was we took offense to it, and we had Police Lives Matter, and then it just became an adversarial situation when that's not what it was intended to do. Instead of reaching out, we decided to lash out. Okay, that's number one. I work in a very good department. I don't believe any of my white brothers and sisters got into this job because they specifically wanted to demean, brutalize, and hurt black people. However, there is a rampant kind of mistrust amongst the community and police where I believe in implicit bias in that there have been times where I can see, not necessarily with my department, but times when there would have been a chance where they would have given a white subject about 3 or 4 more seconds to do whatever it is that they would have done based on a fear that they may not even know that they have. I love my job. I love this city. As a man with immunocompromised parents, worried about where they're going to go and get their prescriptions and their food, all of this hurts me. I sat and I watched a man have the life taken out of him for 9 minutes. And I cannot tell you, I'm a big dude. I'm 6'3", 250 pounds. I cannot tell you how long I cried. You know, it hurts. It hurts that the people in my community, that the people in my profession, which I do understand, we have a romantic responsibility, which is we are here to serve and protect. Just like America, we are here as the land of the free, home of the brave, you live long, equality, and all that other good stuff. But both of these institutions at times fall short of what our symbols are. The good thing about both of the institutions, in my mind, is that we at least try to reach them. However, we have people inside of our institution that constantly bring that institution down. And now what you're seeing right now is evidence of that in America and for the police department. I don't know if you agree with what I'm saying. I don't even know if I said it clearly. No.
You said it as beautifully, George. I got to give you all the credit in the world here. You said it as beautifully as anybody could have. You're speaking from your heart. I agree with everything you just said. As you may know or may not know, I do a lot of work with police organizations, the Police Memorial Foundation here in Chicago, and when we lose a police officer in the city, you know, we raise a lot of money, and one of the events, it's like 2 years ago now, when there's two police officers were killed in the same incident, were hit by a train, right, when they were going up on the tracks looking for a suspect,
right,
and. At that, there was a that happened in the middle of the week, and then on that Friday night, there was a quickie fundraiser for the family so that they get the some of the burial expenses taken care of. And I was talking to a guy a white police officer, a sergeant now, been on the job close to 20 years, and he was talking about growing up in a mixed neighborhood. He went to Catholic schools. He played sports. His best friends were black. And when he got on the job more and more, and this guy, and I'm going to tell you something, George. I mean, this is, you know, talk about a big dude. He's a very big dude. And he started to cry telling me this story about how darkened his heart has become. And he even said to me, he used the words, "It has made me a racist." And I was never a racist. And I mean, and I don't know that one can be made a racist, right? But I mean, what he was doing is trying to fight against this instinct based on what his experience has been as a Chicago police officer. I know, George, that you see stuff that average citizens just do not see. And it does darken the heart. It's a very tough job. And thank God you're doing it and you're willing to do it. But, you know, that was a really honest thing. And I wonder, you know, how much we can do to try to help people understand who've had these experiences, help them understand and process what they've seen.
I had, when I first got on the job, I had an officer from Chicago. He actually kind of said, like, a little bit similar to the same thing. We're working by Dearborn Homes and Stateway Gardens at the time, and it was bad. It was right after September 11th. I've been a cop for a long time. And he actually said it. I don't know if he meant to say it, but he said it. He's like, if it wasn't for guys like you, I could really see myself going down a really, really, really dark path. And I didn't know what to say to that. I mean, I was young. This is almost 20 years ago. I've been doing this since 02. The thing that hurt me the most about that whole situation was, I'm a self-defense instructor. Guys took me under their wing, and like I said, once again, I'm a large dude. I'm very aware. I'm hyper-aware. And I'm not trying to make light of anything, but I'm hyper-aware of the fact that anytime I put my hands on somebody, there's a chance it might look like a Rodney King beating. That's how big I am compared to the rest of the public.
Yeah.
6'2", 250 doesn't really suck, but I'm basically a foot. I'm the same size as Khalil Mack. I just want people to think about that.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a very large man.
And you're wearing blue. And when you're wearing blue, and when you and it's true. I mean, you saw. I mean, and I know I'm late for the break here, but this is so important. You know, you saw the video of some of the protesters, a peaceful, relatively peaceful protest in the North Side 2 nights ago. And you know, a white kid grabbed a bike away from a cop, you know, one of the bike cops. And he got sworn by 6 officers, all with the baton swinging and, you know, firing away. And then they grabbed the kid up and they moved him out of the way. And, you know, as citizens, we look at that and we go, oh, my God, that's, you know, that's police violence. And that's look how awful that is. But the reality is these are very tough jobs. We don't want to be, nobody wants to be in this situation that we find ourselves in right now. And I cried, too, watching that video, because I watched that whole damn video. Of George Floyd, it's so chilling what happened. And again, I mean, you know, you're a cop, you know, cops are not very. I have not talked to a single cop who thinks that that's okay. I just there, and I think we all agree on that. But George, thank you for so brilliantly articulating your position, and thank you for what you do, my friend.
I thank you for letting me talk, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, we're looking for solutions here. 312-981-7200, and your observations about what has happened. Some really compelling and thoughtful people in the last hour been making an argument here in terms of how we can find a way past this, whether it's between police and the citizenry or the racial divide that happens. And Paul, you're on WGN. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I'm just calling right now. I heard the gentleman you had talking with you were talking about, because if somebody owns a business over there and he lives in Naperville or Skokie or Lincolnwood in a rich neighborhood, it's all right to burn it down. You know, I disagree with that. You know what I mean? I work at a hospital, you know, and today at work, EMTs are coming in there. Man, it was crazy last night. We had to go from here. I was in a hospital in the north side, and then we went to the south side, and they're trying to get us right here. And this guy was just going on, like, wow. And then what's going on in Cicero? You know, breaking into a liquor store, how is that solving, you know, trying to help out a protest we're going over there? I support what the people there trying to defend their business. Because let's not forget, because in World War II, didn't our government ask the mobsters to patrol the ports? You know, I'm just saying, you know, I kind of believe that, you know what, defend our neighborhood. We don't want to go to a neighborhood where people are scared to come out. You know what I'm saying? Those stores that they burned down, the CBS, the Walgreens. Now, I feel sorry for the people that got health problems. Now they can't go to that store. Now they got to go a mile away. Now if they don't got a car, they got to call somebody. Hey, can you help me out and take me to get my prescription? Well, what happened? Well, they burned the store down over here. You know what I'm saying? How is that helping the people in the neighborhood?
Well, you know, the point you're making, too, about whether it's Cicero or Little Village, because we were playing that audio from there, where you've got the gangs, and the one guy's like, hey, look, I don't gangbang, but I'm here, I'm going to protect my neighborhood, and these guys have ARs, and they've got pistols, and they're basically ready for war, and then it breaks out. I mean, we played that. Right. I'm not going to play that tape again. Because
I don't agree with that. But I'm saying, just, you know, if you hold your ground, they say, well, I'm not going there, because those people, we mess around, they're going to kick us out. So let's go somewhere.
Not good for the neighborhood either. I mean, you don't want the neighborhood. You don't want to live in a neighborhood that is run by a gang, right? And there already.
I mean, agree with that at all. Like I said, I work at a hospital. I see cops and I see EMT. Like today, I was working. I have to be in the yard. I hear EMT talking. Man, it was crazy last night. Man, he was in the north side. He had to go to the south side, and they were trying to. I couldn't get in there. He goes, "This is like a war zone." And the guy was like, well, he was just telling people, and I'm listening, oh, you all right, man? He goes, yeah, man, I've been working like 12 hours straight, and it's crazy. I go, man, you know, thank you a lot for serving us, you know, and get some rest, man, because, you know, it sounds like you're getting burned out, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Hey, can I ask you, since you work in a hospital, since we seem to have forgotten about COVID-19 because of all this, and I understand why, it's become a secondary issue for us, but are you seeing it getting better in the hospital setting or not?
I'll be honest right now, it's getting better now. The last couple of weeks has been getting better, because I can't tell you what hospital I work at.
Yeah, that's all right.
We had to build a cooler, in other words, you know what I'm saying? And we built that cooler. And have we been using it? Yes, we have been using it. But the last 2 weeks, we haven't been using it. So we've seen the numbers going down. I had to go into a couple patients this week where there's COVID. And I looked at myself, wait a minute. If a nurse is going in there, and I work in a hospital, I fix stuff, you know what I'm saying? And I go, if she's going in there, I'm going to go in there, man. Because you know what? I praise her a lot. You know, I'm going to go in there. And you know what? If it was meant for me, it was meant for me. But I'm going to go in there because they're going in there and they're putting their lives every day. They're in the same floor. I'm going in there to fix something. You know what I'm saying? And
I but are you wearing?
And, you know what? I look at it. You know what? If I was going to go, I was going to go.
Yeah.
But if it wasn't not for me, because they gave me the right equipment to put in there, and I, you know what? Now I go in there, and I'm not scared no more. I feel like, you know what? The nurses are doing it. I can do it. You know what I'm saying? But, I'm not scared no more. I'm like, the first time, I didn't lie to you, I was nervous. My hand was shaking.
Yeah.
I had to get fitted for a mask. And I was like, man, you got to put the face shield. You got to put a cap on. You got to put gloves on. You got a gown. And now I go in with no problem. I said, you know what? They're doing it. I can do it.
But are you going in? But wait, Paul, before I let you go, I just want to. You are still wearing the PPE when you're going in, though, right?
Oh, correct. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. I'm going in like that. You know, I'm not going freehand. No. I'm going out, but I'm not scared with the equipment I have now.
Yeah.
I trust the equipment because I see the nurses going in there. And I say, you know, if they're doing it, I can do it. And I got a lot of praise for them. You know what I'm saying? Like the EMT. They're going out there picking people. They don't know if they got COVID. And they're picking them up, and they're staying in there. Are you all right? You know what's going on? I can't breathe. Okay, take this. You know what I'm saying? And now they're coming into the ER, bring it to the nurses there. They don't know, was he COVID or not? Well, I don't know, you know, and then they go from there. But, you know, like I said, you know, I go in there. If they're doing it, I can do it, and I feel better now, you know what I'm saying? But as far as the numbers are going, they are dropping.
Okay. Paul, thank you for what you do, and thank you for the call, man. Really great.